This is the Montana Outdoor Podcast, brought to you in part by Rocky Mountain Truck and Trailer in Missoula, home of Boss Snowplows, CM Truck Beds, and Diamond C Trailers. Just go to rmtte.com for more information. And by Superior Hardwoods of Montana, home of the largest selection of in-stock high-end wood products and flooring in the western United States. Let them guide you through the woods at superior-hardwoods.com. Happy New Year, everyone. I'm Manny Clark. This week, we are going to do something a bit different. We are going to take a look back at last year's podcasts. Which podcast was your favorite from last year? Have any of your friends mentioned which one they liked best? Well, we were kind of wondering the same thing. We wanted to know what were the top 5 podcasts from last year. So the logical thing to do was to look at our podcast stats to see which podcasts got listened to the most. Yeah, there were a few surprises, and there were a few we had a pretty good idea were going to be in that top 5. So let's find out what were the top Montana outdoor podcasts. Starting at number 5 is a podcast we dropped on May 6th of last year. The podcast title was a bit of a mystery in itself. The title reads, "What do you get when you cross Jeremiah Johnson, Albert Einstein, and Henry David Thoreau?" Well, you would get the legendary fly fishing guide, John Perry.
With practice, you can cast directly into a 20-mile-an-hour wind. With practice casting.
In fly fishing.
In fly fishing. Oh, yes.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow. I would love to learn that.
I've seen, in fact, he did it to me 40 years ago, however long it was, where you tie, like, you have duct tape. And you tie.
Well, that's a long time
ago. Is that a long time ago? You don't use a duct tape anymore?
That was for teaching you, and that's actually when you had a hair on your head, too, if you remember.
Yeah. He pulled most of that out just fishing with me. It just drove me nuts.
Actually, hanging around you is what. You know, so let's say.
I think it fell under your back.
You have permits. We're talking, and I didn't mention this. John is an outfitter.
Yeah.
I mean, a very successful outfitter, and he's been doing it for a number of years.
Yeah, some of the most famous people in the world have come here and directly want to fish with this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, but he also runs a bunch of guides, too.
Yeah.
Right.
And so you do all that stuff, John. When I fish with you, one of the things that old Doug Persico, the late, great Doug Persico from Rock Creek Fisherman's Mercantile, we fished with John, and we always flipped a coin to see who would be in the front of the boat. You never wanted to be in the front of the boat when John is oaring, because he is on your you-know-what
all day long.
I've mellowed since then. I ask people now, I'm going to, in the first couple hours, you know, if they're beginners, I'll say, okay, I'm going to give you some advice and whatnot. Now, if I'm giving you too much advice, let me know in a kind way. Don't wait until 3 hours later and tell me. So, anyway, some of my guys have come to me and talked to me about that, but that's because I have, honest to God, never met anybody more passionate about the mountains and streams of Montana. The guides think I'm nuts.
You mean you've never met anybody like yourself?
Like, with the passion that I have, I'm not saying I'm the best, but I have never met anybody that loves it, because we are fishing in a created world, God's creation, and we're loving it.
And you could take it wrong if you're in the front of the boat, where he's actually mad at you, because what he'll do is he'll say, "Captain, over there, 11 o'clock, right next to that, right behind that swirl, right behind that." No, you, and sorry, Johnny. And then he's right 100% of the time. Mm. There's always a fish. If you hit it right, there's always a fish there. He knows how to fish those rivers. If you want to know and have a great time, by the way, this is a guy you want to go out with, because he ties his own flies. He knows the river. I remember one time there was a guy that wanted to be a guide, and he wanted to work for John. And so John says, well, the only way you're going to be able to even think about working under my license is you got to go fishing with me. And I happened to be with him when he took this guy out. That was the most, I felt so sorry for that guy, because he was rowing the boat and John was in the front. You remember that?
And, oh, yeah.
Yeah, and if he screwed up. I don't know if he ever hired the guy.
Well, listen to this.
I don't know if he ever quit crying, actually.
do you remember? Is that the time we kind of flipped? Yeah, we flipped.
Could have been.
Let me tell you about this guy. I won't mention his name. This guy, he persevered. He kept on going, and he's a friend of mine. He's an awesome guide and outfitter now, and I really respect. He lives in the Bitter. He knows who I'm talking about. He's a great man, just a great man. Never gave up. He has a loving family, loving wife. They're very passionate. He kind of doesn't guide as much more. He's kind of, I mean, he's going into different avenues. But this, I call him young. He's probably 45-ish, 50. You know, that's young. Well, actually, me and you and Downrigger and Jack Benny were all only 39, if you remember that. Jack Benny. So, no, he's an excellent guide and an excellent person. So he did not give up.
Okay, that's good. We're happy for him.
Yes.
Yeah. But he only had a few years of therapy.
And, you know. So let's talk about, let's get back to these flies. Can they buy a fly that you tie?
Yeah, my personal flies, you know, I'm not going to mention prices and whatnot because they vary. But some of the streamers,
it depends on how much money you have or something? Or?
Yeah, the richer you are, the more I'm going to charge.
Perfect.
That's the same deal at McDonald's when they see somebody, right? They see some millionaire come in and they put a zero on that double cheeseburger.
And by the way, McDonald's will never be a sponsor of our podcast.
We just lost that one.
Yeah.
So, how
do they buy the flies? They go on a website, I assume.
You know, it's usually word of mouth, sometimes off my johnperryflyfishing.com website. You know, I don't look at my own site, but, you know, they'll contact me and say, I'd like some flies. But I had 11 surgeries in the past 2.5 years. So the old mountain man, through all the years of hard, you know.
Yeah, it's hard on
your
body.
Hard guiding and outfitting, plus 2 serious car accidents where I should have gone to heaven, but God didn't want me there yet. Mm-hmm. He wanted me here so I can bother people more.
Mm-hmm. And you've done a good job of that. You're doing a good job of bothering people. No, actually, so John,
I'm a professional botherer.
So most people that come on our podcast usually have a website. Do you have a website, John?
Yeah.
Well, I have several.
JohnPerryFlyFishing.com, right?
Okay. JohnPerryFlyFishing.com, and then we have another one. But GoDaddy has kind of captured it, wants me to buy back it. So it's so we're going a different route.
No Daddy. That's
well, they
no
were
daddy.
Really good, but 10 years ago. But we're steering away, and he'll beep that off anyway.
So we lost the GoDaddy sponsorship.
Yeah, GoDaddy will never sponsor us.
You
that's
want
okay.
to, believe me.
So you got a phone number. I mean, I just want to throw this out right now. If somebody's listening to the podcast, and I go, I want to talk to John. What's your number? How do they get a hold of you?
406- 370-9183. Talk about hunting, fishing. If we can't do it or you're going to a different area, I have outfitter friends all over the state, and they are great. You know, I recommend people to them. They recommend people to me. I have another outfitter associate that does the Missouri River, and he has connections with these ranchers. He's a gun guy, and he sells pistols, and he just is hit a home run with a niche. He brings the people in. And these are shooters, a lot of military, ex-military people. And
really?
They hunt prairie dogs and gophers.
I was
and
ask
he
you.
Just
yeah.
Awesome. So I'm heading to Fort Peck the 8th and 9th. And I talked with this other fellow
of May
soon. And then he said, John, you're on your way up there. Come. I said, we had some cancellations. The deposit is there. And you could have Sam take you. Now, Sam works for this guy and me, and he's an excellent guide. He represents him, and he represents me. But they're into shooting, and they all have the guns, different ranges, the bullets, everything.
You will be in hog heaven when it comes to it.
Oh, I know, buddy. You know, hunting all those, you know, my relatives that had those eastern Montana ranches, hunting those great ranches or prairie dogs, that was fun when I was, you know. But nowadays, I wouldn't dare eat those backstraps, man, because they got a disease.
Why? What disease?
I don't know. In order to remember the old days, you get the backs. You'd have to have, you know, you'd have to bat 100 doggone
prairie dogs.
That's because you're not the mountain man.
Yeah, John Perry is quite a character, isn't he? Next, let's find out which of the 2023 Montana Outdoor podcasts took the number 4 spot in our top 5 countdown. Our 4th most listened to podcast was about a topic that had quite a few folks around Flathead Lake pretty upset. Yeah, I am talking about the low water levels on Flathead Lake. So Downrigger went to the folks that were getting all the blame for that. The company that owns the dam on the lake, Energy Keepers Incorporated. Downrigger talked to the CEO of the company, Brian Lipscomb.
Well, so my question then is, okay, well, why is it? Brian, why is it that low? So tell us what your theories are and thoughts are on that.
So no theories. It's just plain old facts. Yeah, water in and water out. So keep in mind, I already mentioned every month of the year this year, our water supply into Flathead Lake has been below normal except for 1 month, and that was the month of May. So every month. And that really makes sense when you stop and think, because some people I tell them that, and they go, holy cow, Brian, we had one of the worst winters on record. What do you mean our water supply is low? I thought we had plenty of snow. So when you start taking that apart, though, it starts to make sense. So in general, in Montana, there's kind of a line that comes across in a triangle basis. So it carved out the northwest part of the state. So the Kootenai and the Flathead, especially the upper Flathead, finished the year a little low. Mm-hmm. I think the Kootenai Basin finished in the 70 percentiles, which I'm not positive, but that might be a new record low for the Kootenai Subbasin or the Kootenai Basin.
Yeah, on the Montana Outdoor Radio Show, which I'm also a part of, we talked about that several times throughout the year. Is everybody's going, wow, this has got to be the best year for snowpack and all that. And we pointed out, well, not so much. When you look at this region that feeds Flathead Lake, at best, from what we saw, it's about 80% of what it should be. That snowpack was, and it got even lower than that. So now, as a result, so we hit May, when all of a sudden we have this big upswing in temperature, kind of unusual from the way it normally is. So now we get all that runoff come shooting down, and rather than trickle down, and now we look at the river coming in, and we're only at 30%. From what I understand, of what it normally would be coming in. Is that correct?
That's correct. Okay. That is correct. There's one more piece of the story, though, coming up.
Go ahead.
This is that we had an unusually cold winter in these dry areas. So, I've lived in the Mission Valley essentially my entire life. I left for college, and then I left for a little while to work in Portland. But most of my life, I've lived right here in the Mission Valley. And we just don't see, Dale, and you're probably familiar with this, we don't see winters where the snow comes and never leaves. Usually we have winters that are mixed, and we'll get warm spells and cold spells.
Right.
And we'll get rain even with snow, or rain instead of snow. This year we got snow at the end of October, and it never melted.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get a melt-off. We didn't get any rain in the middle of winter, unless it was freezing rain, and then it just added to the ice. So we didn't get the freeze thaw, so the soil moistures never replenished during the winter, because all that was on top, it was on the surface. So now you add that to the situation where you just described, where you get a hot May, because literally we were getting snow still, and things were still frozen at third week of April, and we're still getting snow. And then May hits, and the first 2 weeks of May, we have unseasonably warm, nearly 90 degrees for two weeks. And you're right, that snow came off so quick, and there's none of the moisture in the ground, and it just left. The moisture we did receive essentially for that whole 9 month period is gone down the river.
Mm-hmm. Right. So now, when the rest of that runoff starts coming, you've got this ground that is just parched, and so it's sucking in all the moisture, as I understand it. So now we're left with what actually then gets to the river is this way low amount from what we're normally used to seeing. So then we get the next falsehood, if you will, or the theory that comes across my email box a lot, which is, you know, that I'm known as Downrigger Dale on the Outdoor Radio Show, and I guess on this podcast too. And they say, Downrigger, well, why don't they just shut the water off on the other end? So that now, whatever, even if it's only 30% less flowing in, at least it's going to build up. Why do they keep letting water out the other side? What's your answer for that one?
So there's two sides, two parts to answer there. First, Dale, is on the fill side. we're still a flood control facility. And even though we had low snowpack, it came out incredibly quick. And there was more snow than what would have fit in Flathead Lake. So we started filling Flathead. We recognized this situation early on. We started filling Flathead Lake in March, first week of March, 6 weeks early. Mm-hmm. And we're working with the Army Corps of Engineers while we do that, because we have flood control requirements that are part of our license. So we work with the Army Corps and we say, okay, we're not going to hit minimum pool in April. April 15th is our normal minimum pool, 2883. We said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to start filling the first week of March. And we were a couple feet above that minimum. So we started filling then. Then as we go through, we're watching things. And we're starting to actually forecast at that time. I think we put out our first Facebook update in April that said, we have some forecasts that show that Flathead Lake will miss refill by as much as 18 inches if some conditions persist. Well, guess what? Those conditions not only persisted, they got worse.
Yeah.
And so we're watching it. And then we go into April, first couple of weeks of May that we're describing. And we have an increase of flow coming into the lake that is phenomenal. That runoff started in days, Dale. Normally it takes a long time for the snowpack to what we call ripen, where it gets warm enough where it turns to water and starts to move. Mm-hmm. This one, we went from 0 to 100 in less than a week.
Wow.
And so we saw flows peaking out on the upper river nearly 50,000 cubic feet per second for
a
day.
Holy smokes.
And so we have to follow that up, watching it, you know, because we're managing flood control. So we bump up, and we go above our minimums, and we're above what we can handle through the facility, and we spilled for about 3 or 4 days. And as we're spilling, then we're watching the hydrograph, and it's coming back down almost as fast. And so we drop back down to 25,000 cubic feet per second, I think within 10 days. Just boom, boom. And so we have a little peak, then we follow that. We capture some of it, but not all of it. And then we start to recognize, wow, we're running out of snow quick. And these forecasts for rain, like normally happen in May, aren't materializing. So we start working with the Army Corps again, and we say, hey, we need to have some relief from our 3 feet below full pool on May 30th. That's another flood control, you know, 3 feet from full pool at the end of May to allow for then additional runoff as we come into June, which is would be normal. This year, we looked at that and said, we're not going to have any runoff in June. We're not going to have any snow in June. So we better capture what we can. And so we filled the lake first to a foot and a half from full pool.
Mm-hmm.
And then we looked at that for a couple of days, and we went back to the Army Corps and we said, that's not enough. We need to capture everything we can and get it caught. And they agreed, and they said, okay, you're fully relieved of flood control requirements this year. So boom, we filled the lake. And by the end of May, we were less than a foot from full. Normally we're 3 feet from full. We're less than a foot by the end of May. And then boom, we hit full pool June 12th.
Well,
so
Brian,
we caught all of the water that we could. If we would have caught more, Dale, when mm-hmm. it was coming out, we would have overfilled the lake. We would have flooded upstream and along the shores of Flathead Lake, which would have been a violation of our license. We didn't do that. We filled right to there, and then we held it right there. We immediately went to minimums, and then the inflows went right down below minimums, and the lake immediately started drafting.
Yeah, that was a rough time for many property owners on Flathead Lake. We are counting down from the 5th most listened to Montana Outdoor podcast to the most listened to podcast of 2023. So did number 5 and number 4 match up with what you thought they would be? No. Well, let's see if number 3 does, right after this. Are any of you out there having trouble deciding what the perfect floor for your home should be? Why not let Superior Hardwoods of Montana guide you through the woods? At Superior Hardwoods of Montana, their mission is to provide you with the knowledge to make the best choice for you. Thinking bamboo. My friends at Superior Hardwoods say, leave it in the zoo feeding the pandas. Superior Hardwoods is a plastic, stone, and grass-free zone. They are the home of true, solid hardwood flooring options. It doesn't matter what your contractor, your best friend, or your mom would put in their house. Your floor is your choice. Come and browse their vast stock of flooring. Yeah, that is where that saying comes from. Let them guide you through the woods. And they really do just that. With a huge selection of woods to choose from and true pros in wood products with you, it will not take long for them to help you zero in on just what you were looking for, even if you weren't sure what that was when you walked in their door. See, their specialty is transforming those confused, frustrated, and about to give up kind of folks into happy, well-informed customers. Go see them, Superior Hardwoods of Montana, on the web at superior-hardwoods.com, or stop in and see them at 5120 Highway 93 South, just south of Missoula. Superior Hardwoods of Montana. That's superior-hardwoods.com. We are back here on the Montana Outdoor Podcast. This week, we are counting down the five most listened to podcasts of 2023. Let's see what our third most listened to podcast is. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. Fisheries biologist Adam Strainer joined Downrigger Dale on July 1st of last year to talk about what is going on with the fish in Canyon Ferry Reservoir.
With me, Adam Strainer, fisheries biologist for Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, Region 4, which means he is the fisheries biologist for the place I want to talk about today, and that is Canyon Ferry Reservoir. Recently, the Canyon Ferry Walleye Festival was on, and I was talking with the captain a while back and some other folks, and we were just kind of saying, gee, I wonder what that tournament's going to produce. You know, we saw those huge weights coming out of Fort Peck, and we thought, well, you know, Canyon Ferry's probably going to be less. I was thinking maybe in the 40s. I remember Captain said somewhere in the 30-pound range for the two-day tournament. Came out that it was over 50 pounds for the winning weight. Adam Strainer with the FWP, did that surprise you?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. It's been a couple of years, and I appreciate the time we get to spend together from time to time. I think the last time we were out on Canyon Ferry with Mark right before a tournament. But anyway, getting to this year's tournament, to answer your question, no, it was not a surprise to us to see the weights. We've seen a pretty incredible age class of fish move into the larger length groups over the last couple years in response to a regulation change we made about 2 or 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so, no.
Okay. Well, good. Tell us about the regulation change then. What did you guys change in regulations that you think helped, you know, bring this walleye population up to those bigger weights?
Yeah, so around 2020, we were redeveloping our management plan, which basically sets the course for the next 10 years. And one common thing that we've seen and the public is seeing as well at that time was there was a pile of smaller walleye in a forage limited system, meaning, you know, there wasn't too much food to feed these things. And so we started to get a little bit more creative and thinking about how we can kind of ask anglers to help in a more proactive way by, you know, adhering to a pretty stringent regulation. And we decided to go with a one fish over 15 limit. So basically the current regulation is 10 fish daily, one over 15. What that in effect does is that forces harvest of smaller fish, which there are plenty of in the system.
Yeah.
And also protects those 15 inches and greater and allows them to grow to, you know, I'll say that 18 to 22 inch range. And that in large part is what you saw in this recent tournament with a number of fish now being found in that 18 to mid 20s with still all of those huge, you know, 30 inch fish that we've historically seen on Canyon Ferry.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a very encouraging when you hear that fishermen, you know, are adhering to the regulation. Of course, they're supposed to, but, you know, we all know some people decide they're going to do it their way and risk it. But that's good. That means people are following the rules and doing it right. For the walleye in Canyon Ferry, their main source of food is perch. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's right. And we've been at or near historically low levels of perch in Canyon Ferry now for a decade plus. We continue to do habitat projects like the Pines for Perch, mm-hmm, Christmas tree project annually to try to, you know, stabilize the population at the very least. And, you know, we always keep our fingers crossed that Mother Nature will throw us a bone and produce a great age class. You know, we recently have heard good things from perch anglers in the winter. Although, you know, catch rates haven't been the greatest in our creel, there are still a handful of folks that have given us really positive reports from what they're seeing perch wise. So there is an age class of perch out there, multiple age classes of perch. And we seem to be trending upward, although it's nothing like what we've seen historically.
Okay. Now, why do you suppose that is, that you've seen such a reduction in the perch population?
You know, we've traditionally said, you know, when that first age class of walleye really took off in the late 90s, that kind of coincided with a giant age class of perch around, you know, 2000, 2001. And what we've seen is a population of self-sustaining walleye in the system. You know, we don't plant anything. They have miles and miles of spawning shoreline. And what that equates to is when you get a banner age class of walleye in a system that, like Canyon Ferry, where there, you know, there's not a ton of cover, it's a highly fluctuating reservoir. So anything that forage-wise is available for food has the potential to be cropped off annually. And that's what we saw from about 2001 to present. So we have seen years in the last 15 where I would say large age classes of perch were available in the system, but they're in effect cropped off before they even reach age one. And so we're still keeping our fingers crossed. There is a population out there. They're producing offspring annually, providing some semblance of both a fishery and a forage base for walleye. But that remains the struggle with Canyon Ferry.
Okay. So you guys are doing all you can to try to bolster that. So the population of walleye, though, it sounds like there's still plenty of perch to, you know, obviously keep that walleye population healthy, though.
Yeah, we've seen some interesting things in the last couple of years. In 2022, actually, one of the most dominant prey species for walleye was actually walleye. And wow, yeah. There's a lot of research available out there that says, you know, when walleye populations run out of forage, they tend to cannibalize. And, you know, if you think about the population as a whole, you know, our goal right now is to get the number of fish less than 15 inches to a reasonable, manageable level. And if one of those tools is actually them being their very own forage, it's actually something we were interested and hoping to see, because that really does help the big picture. You know, we always tell folks we don't need to see a banner age class of walleye annually. They're such long-lived fish that if they get off a decent spawn, let's say every 3 to 5 years, that's really good for a population. But what we're seeing on Canyon Ferry in recent years is every single year is now a banner age class of walleye. And so we have to use the best tools we have, which is generally speaking harvest by anglers, to keep those numbers at bay. Okay. But if they're also helping us out by eating some of their own, that's actually a good thing at this point.
Okay. Yeah. So they're kind of managing their own population, if you will. You know, Canyon Ferry's always been noted for, you know, being a great trout fishery. Is that still the case as well?
You know, so our trout population is something we've been working on over the last couple of years. We had some budget constraints that led to hatchery reductions in 2018 and 19, and we actually did see the population decline of rainbow trout in Canyon Ferry for a couple of years. But we've been at full capacity now for a couple of years, and we're starting to see numbers that are similar to pre-budget cut levels. But in the springtime, I mean, anybody who's ever fished Canyon Ferry, you can still go to the north end of the reservoir at the traditional locations and have exceptional rainbow trout fishing.
Okay. Yeah. Do you think some of those walleye are feeding on the trout as well or no?
So yeah, we do see a small percentage of trout that are eaten by walleye. Typically, that's usually around the time frames when we're planting fish. You know, in Canyon Ferry, now for the last 10 plus years, we've been stocking larger trout, so 7 to 8 inches. And so when those things first go in the water, we tend to see some predation by walleye. Although it's not significant in any way, shape, or form, it does occur. But, you know, at this point, you know, with a forage depleted system, walleye in general become pretty opportunistic.
Mm-hmm.
We see in large part the smaller fish early in the season, let's say June and July, they're pretty much eating bugs and the occasional crayfish. And then once those perch, if there is an age class, become available, let's say late July, early August, if they're there, they're capitalizing a perch. These things want to eat perch.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I know it's like over in the Canyon Ferry, not Canyon Ferry, that's where we're talking about, over on Fort Peck, of course, it's the Cisco that are, you know, kind of the one of the main food sources for walleye. How do you, where do you see the difference there? Is it really about the same as far as the protein that walleye are getting out of that? Is there an advantage having Cisco as opposed to perch being the main food source? What do you see there?
Well, you know, Cisco as a forage fish has been discussed over the years as a potential option for Canyon Ferry, mostly coming from the public. And our stance for Canyon Ferry being it's a very, you know, it's really a sterile environment, but highly productive. And it's, and it has a management plan that basically allows us to have to manage for three primary species. And one of those is rainbow trout, of course, which we just talked about. Mm-hmm. And Cisco are planktivores. And so we currently focus on rainbow trout, and by adding another planktivore into the system is a great unknown for us. And so the risk certainly outweighs the reward to add Cisco to a system like Canyon Ferry. But to speak to like protein levels, things like that, I think once a well-established forage fish is in a system and a species like walleye starts keying in on it, it really doesn't matter what it looks like, as long as it's a consistent forage base.
Boy, Adam Strainer knows his stuff, doesn't he? We are just one spot away from number one on our countdown of the five most listened to podcasts of 2023. The podcast that came in second was a fun one for sure. Downrigger and the captain got on Bill Zaraka's boat named Time Off. Bill, also known as the Salmon Slayer, took the boys out fishing for the elusive king salmon on Fort Peck Reservoir. And it was all hands on deck.
Two. Got one right yep. There. You got one right there. We're getting... I'll go and hold the microphone, Downrigger.
Okay. All right. So now we've got the captain heading out to the back of the boat with Bill, and we've got one of our friends, Mike Prisky, on the boat with us as well, and they've got a fish on. So, Captain, why don't you get in there and narrate a little for us?
Tell us what's going on. Mike Prisky is pulling us in. You got a salmon on there, Mike?
I think so. Feels like it. I don't think it's a lake trout unless it's a pretty good size one.
Okay, and we got Bill. We stole Bill's microphone and his headsets because he's going to have to net this salmon as he's getting the net out right now. Bill's instructing Mike where to bring the salmon.
Get the microphone
up here.
Close to him, there, Captain.
What's that?
Get the microphone close to him out
okay.
there. All right, now they're bringing him in towards the back of the boat here. Going to get our first look at him. What size you think there, Captain?
It looks like it's about a 5-pounder, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Something
nice
like that.
Fish,
five,
nice
six
fish.
Pounder. 5-6-pound salmon. It's a salmon. That's what we want. That's mm-hmm. what we're after. And it looks like it was caught on a meat rig. Interesting meat rig. And I'll have Bill describe what the setup is on this meat rig.
Yes, sir.
Bill, describe us the flasher and the. And what you got there, you got kind of some a neat meat rig, actually. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah, that's, you know, the traditional meat rig here is it's got, you know, it's a 5-6 foot lead with a couple basically hoochies in line or little, you know, skirts, and then your meat head on the end.
Mm-hmm.
That's I mean, that's like a Great Lake classic.
Okay, there you go. There's the first salmon in the boat for us today, downrigger, and I'm going to Bill's going to have to take care of that salmon, so I'm going to come in here. What do we got going on here for rods and everything else? Can you remember? We got about six or seven of them out.
Yeah, we've got a, you know, we've got the four riggers down, and we got two dipsies, and we got one long line out on a board. You know what? I think we'll kind of keep it there for now and see what happens. You know, I've got a mix of some meat rigs and flies on the flat on the downriggers. There's a meat rig out on the long line, which caught us a darn good fish yesterday. And then I got the spoon running down below everything and a little farther back.
And before people say, I'm going to call the game board right now, there is four people of us on the boat. So that's why we have that many lines.
Explain what a meat rig is, Bill. Is it a T-bone or a sirloin on there? Or?
Yeah, you bet. The meat rig is just nothing more than a filleted herring. You know, it's the half of it. Instead of the whole herring, it's just the fillet off of it. It's really popular on the Great Lakes. That is a lot of their workhorse to catching salmon. You know, after the early spring, when it warms up just a little, I would say those big charter boats and the brunt of the catching out there is meat rigs.
And this is the first year you've brought the meat rig, not the meat rig, but the long lining board, the planer board technique here to Fort Peck.
Yeah, you know, we fish it a lot out there, the big boards, you know, where you have two or three. Yep, on the Great Lakes, down each side, and and those lakes are a lot clearer than Fort Peck. And, you know, early in the morning, it can be a decent rigger bite. You know, they'll come in tight and hit the stuff and dipsies, and boy, once that sun gets up and it slows down, those fish just seem to be negative to come in and hit the close stuff, and that's where these long lines are running big 450 feet of coppers or steel. Earlier in the year, lead core out behind everything and off to the side.
Now, Captain, you had said on the radio show that we do, and a lot of people that listen to this podcast also listen to the radio show, you had said, well, we're going to share a secret that the Slayer uses. Is that what we're talking about here with the planer board?
Yeah, well, I guess it was a secret until he started using it. Mm-hmm. And so that was a new technique.
Fort Peck, yeah. You don't see many people using that out here.
Because and one of the reasons for that is because I think it's a secret is that early on, like in July, it was really very, very, very productive for Bill compared to the downriggers. And I don't know if you can explain why that was, Bill. Or
yeah, I mean, I can't tell you exactly why. Like running any of this gear, you know, we're always hoping salmon's going to hit something. I don't really care. I can't tell from day to day, but if you can get different presentations out there on different applications, and they'll hopefully tell you what they want. But starting out with these, we'll call them long lines, and it doesn't matter if you're running a lead, copper, a steel, or even just a heavy inline weight and getting it out and back. You know, it's all pretty much the same type of fishing. It's just little different presentations, different signature through the water of what that line carries.
So what would be the difference from as far as the action that this planer board creates as opposed to just being on a downrigger?
Nothing on the action, I don't think. All that planer board is doing, and you can long line and set it in your rod holder or not run a planer board. It's easy to run one gunner, they almost call it, down the chute, way behind you. Any boat can do that without the mess of a planer board. The planer board is just getting it out to the sides a long way out of my normal downrigger spread. So when you cook a fish and they come up on your traditional lines, they're not tangled in this line.
Okay.
A dipsy setup, how does that work on a dipsy setup that you have out here?
Okay, well, they're just a directional diver. You can set them to go straight back or slightly to the left or right or whatever you want to do. And they go, you know, down and off to the side and out and back. And that's a slightly different presentation than your thing sitting on your downriggers pinned in tight. You know, and there's days where those dipsies are the ticket, you know.
And would that be something for, let's say, somebody doesn't fish for these very often, they don't want to spend the money on a downrigger, would that be something that would
Definitely.
What people would use then.
Take a little heavier rod holder. You know, they pull hard, and especially with a strike of a fish. But you bet you could come out and just dipsy fish and never have to buy a downrigger, and you're going to catch some salmon.
Well, you can get a manual downrigger as well. And, you know, you could have a manual downrigger and a dipsy. One of the drawbacks of a dipsy is the fact that you have a lot of line out in the back of the boat. And if there's a lot of folks fishing around you, that could create an issue.
Yep. When it gets tight, and you know, if you meet people close, they can hook them. And when it's, you know, today is the perfect day to run a big spread. Light wind, the boat's tracking true. When you start getting some wind and everything starts dog-legging and 45-ing on you, you start pulling gear out. You can't run all this stuff. It starts coming in at a hard angle and tangling. And
you fished this lake since the 90s. They planted them in 83. You tell me, I think it was 95 was the best year, salmon year, that you have experienced here. Now, fish on in the back.
Reel.
All there right, so now we got Mike Prisky on with another.
I saw that one released myself. It's a salmon. It's a salmon downrigger.
All right, head on out there and describe for us, Captain, what we are seeing.
Oh, yeah.
All right, we got a king out there, Billy.
Yeah, it's a salmon. Oh, yeah. It's Ariel. He's giving us an air show back there.
Let's hear that reel, Captain.
All right, you want to hear the reel?
That's the reel. The fish is taking it out.
So what's... Ask Mike what he's doing here.
It's ripping line. I'm just hanging on, hoping I don't lose him.
Because it's going to be on a podcast. He'd be the first one to lose a big salmon on the podcast. Does that put any pressure on you?
Oh, man. The pressure is on. I don't want to lose this baby.
All right.
I'd never hear the end of it.
Does it feel pretty big to you?
It's bigger than the last one, for sure.
Yeah, have him describe what it feels like when it's pulling.
How does it feel how it's pulling?
It's pulling good. Feels like it's got some weight to him, and he's doing some nice runs.
Okay, so it's taking him a while to bring it in downrigger. Mm-hmm. It's now I can see the flasher, and Bill is saying bring it up to the chute. Bill's getting the net out, and the flasher is coming closer. When he says the chute, it's right behind. That salmon's going to go where he wants to go, and it's coming. It is a little bit bigger than the other one. Now here's another one right here.
He's in the wire. He's in the line.
It's in the wire. Okay, hang on.
Just bring him right up.
We're walking up. We got one is hooked, and Bill's got it in the net, it looks like. And by golly, we got that salmon in the net. And
did we hook that? We hooked the downrigger wire a little bit there, huh?
Yeah, it got into another line.
That can happen now and then, can't it?
What's that?
On the meat hook.
It's on the meat hook again, and it looks like it is bigger, substantially bigger than the one we caught just moments ago, downrigger.
All right.
And that's reporting live from the deck of Time Off, downrigger.
Hey,
I love this big water troll, this big open water type trolling, you know, and it can be great laker fishing, salmon fishing. You know, we've always struggled to find salmon necessarily, you know, April, May, June. You know, we have a good fall, and you're like, well, where are these things? They're somewhere in the lake. How come we can't catch them?
Well, and I think another thing that attracts a lot of people is in the lower 48 states, there's really not very many places you can go and catch a king salmon.
No. I mean, all the Missouri River reservoirs, you know, the Peck, Secaucus, Weehawken, they all are pretty good Chinook fisheries, I believe. And then the Great Lakes, naturally.
Yeah.
You know, they're renowned for...
But the Chinooks here at Fort Peck are larger, primarily, I understand, because of the forage that we have with the Cisco.
It's got to be, you know, the Cisco. There's something. They're just generally more of a football, you know. And even these fish compared to the Great Lakes, Great Lakes are longer. I mean, they get big fish. They're really
big fish.
It's a
different
fish.
Strain of
Yeah,
of,
or just the feed,
Chinook.
Maybe. I'm not sure. I think originally... I'm not so sure the original salmon didn't come from the Great Lakes, you know, in the very first stockings, maybe whether it was in Oahu or Secaucus, but I think the eggs probably originated from the Great Lakes region.
Okay, so you're starting out salmon fishing. You're giving somebody advice. They got a budget that they have to adhere to. What do they need, the basics, to come out here to Fort Peck Reservoir and fish for salmon?
Well, it sure is nice to have a downrigger or two. You know, that's a pretty simple deployment method to get down to 70, 80 feet and efficiently fish something without a whole bunch of line out and a whole bunch of different stuff out. So, you know, if you can have that, if you can't afford a downrigger, period, and you just want to go fishing, yep, some dipsies, you know, and you can run them on heavy Power Pro line. You don't have to have the wire lines and all that fancy roller rods and stuff. Run some dipsies, get a heavy three-way weight on, 8 ounce, 12 ounce, 14 ounce, 16 ounce, three-way it right out the back like a gunner, and you can run all kinds of stuff off that.
Well, one of the things that I noticed, of course, here on Fort Peck, the rules are that, you know, you can only have two rods per person, but, you know, you get three or four people out on a boat like this. What I've noticed that you do is you then go for a wide variety of depths and presentation. Tell us a little bit about why you do that and how you set that up.
Yeah, I never have honestly as big of a set pattern as you may think, but I'll try to incorporate. I like that deep spoon down and behind everything. That's something I've just traditionally run, and it doesn't always go, but it's caught a lot of fish over the years. High in the water column, my outside riggers, they're usually set at 72, and I got pancake weights on them, you know, that you can bend them so they'll direction out even a little farther. Just gives you a little more spread and also helps less chances of tangles as you spread that out. Then my inner downriggers, they're deeper. One's got that deep spoon. The other one's parked above it in between the 72 and the, I think that spoon's probably down at 90. That's got a meat rig on it that we're just soaking, and I'm not sold on that. You know, we caught some fish on meat yesterday, and that may be a fly, and it may be a herring at some point. You know, we're just going to change it out. I mean, as you see, we haven't caught any yet, so it's not like they're jumping in the boat. You know, this is a hunt. We gotta go find some that are willing to bite.
And find some they did. The boys ended up catching quite a few nice king salmon that day, and along the way, they learned a lot from Bill the Salmon Slayer's Araka. And obviously a lot, and I mean a lot, of you must have learned quite a bit too. That is what made that podcast the second most listened to podcast of last year. Well, it is almost time to reveal what the most listened to Montana Outdoor podcast is of 2023. So which one do you think it will be? You will find out right after this.
The other day, I was out doing a little shopping and saw a fellow pull up in his side-by-side ATV, and it had a Boss snowplow mounted on the front of it. I just had to stop and tell him how amazed I was to see the perfect-sized Boss snowplow mounted on that like it absolutely belonged there. I said I had no idea that Boss made a snowplow that fit so perfectly on an ATV. He said, yeah, me neither. But I went into Rocky Mountain Truck and Trailer in Missoula, Montana, and told them I really needed something that could help me use my side-by-side to plow smaller driveways and sidewalks. And I'll be darned if they didn't have the perfect thing. It does an amazing job and has given my snow plowing business the perfect tool. The folks at Rocky Mountain Truck and Trailer mounted it on my side-by-side and showed me how to make that thing work like nothing I'd ever seen. Well, folks, that's Rocky Mountain Truck and Trailer for you. They always know how to help anyone get the job done. Whether it's the perfect Boss snowplow that obviously fits on any kind of rig, to the best dump trailers and truck beds. Folks, I just can't think of a better place to send you to. They have a full service department and can even help you get financing so you can get what you need right away. I hope you're having a great and safe winter out there, and if you're not, remember Rocky Mountain Truck and Trailer, because chances are they have just what you need to make this winter the best you've ever had. Go see them at 5680 Expressway in Missoula, Montana, or on the web at rmtte.com. That's Rocky Mountain Truck and Trailer, rmtte.com. Go see them and have the best winter ever.
Here we go, gang. It is finally time to find out which podcast all of you made the most listened to podcast for all of 2023. This podcast dropped back on July 22nd, and the number of listeners just kept going up and up and up. In fact, we still get a few folks that stopped by and downloaded even today. The guest on the show was making his second appearance on the Montana Outdoor Podcast. He is none other than FWP Fisheries biologist Adam Strainer, talking to Downrigger and the captain about the exciting news that the Kokanee salmon were back in Holter Reservoir.
Got our old friend Adam Strainer back again. He was on recently talking about Canyon Ferry Reservoir. And we've got him back on because, well, the captain who's joining me as well, we heard that the Kokanee salmon are looking pretty fine. We wanted to talk to him a little bit about that. In fact, we got a picture of Adam and his son out, and boy, that was looking good. Adam, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to talking about Kokanee and Holter and other things in Holter for a while.
Yeah. So, Captain, I'll let you jump in there. What's it looking like? You saw this picture. In fact, you sent me, texted me the picture of Adam and his son with these kokanee. That kind of got us both excited because we haven't, caught kokanee on Holter in a long time.
Well, I've known Adam a long time, and one of the things that I was surprised when he said, you know what, Holter Reservoir is really a good salmon fishery right now. And I said, what are you talking about, Adam? And he goes, well, I'll send you a picture. My son and I were out fishing, caught a 4-pound kokanee salmon. And I said, well, is that just a common, just a unique experience, or is it something that happens all the time? And maybe Adam can tell us how he actually fishes for those kokanee.
Oh, wouldn't you like to know?
Yes, we would.
This
is great. Well, let me give you a little background, what we've been seeing recently, and then that led to some outings looking for kokanee. And so a few years ago, we were doing an electrofishing survey below Hauser, and in the fall, and we noticed some large schools of kokanee spawning right below the dam. And when I say large, I mean thousands of kokanee spawning right below the dam. And this harkens back to what I would consider the good old days when the folks used to actually come and look for eagles, harvesting all the kokanee spawning below our dams. But anyway, fast forward a year, and we were like, well, maybe we'll see some of these kokanee in the main reservoir. And we started picking up some really nice looking kokanee in our netting surveys. And so at that time, I started noticing a handful of folks targeting kokanee at traditional locations. And I started hearing the buzz that folks were keeping a couple of fish each outing. And so that piqued my interest to go dust off the old tackle box and really see if we could find them. And the first time out, my dad and I went, we were running basically Dodgers and Hoochies and using traditional Chupay corn, all the stuff that I used as a kid growing up on Hauser Reservoir. And we found some nice, at that time, 16, 18-inch kokanee. And this would have been 2 years ago. And since then, I've started hearing reports of folks consistently finding them. And I'd say the last 3 years now, it's becoming well known that you can find kokanee in certain parts of the reservoir.
What's interesting to me, Adam, is that, let's do a little history here. Hauser, where the kokanee salmon were just unbelievably good. In fact, at one time, Hauser was called the kokanee salmon capital of the world. And then all of a sudden, it was like in the late 90s, they went away. And FWP, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm sure you will, they quit stocking Hauser because it wasn't working. They weren't getting any results out of that stocking. Can you tell the folks a little bit about that and how that works?
Yeah, so there were a couple of things happening around that time frame. And you're spot on in the time frame, about 2001 to 2004. Basically, the last big age class of kokanee left in Hauser sustained that fishery. And that those were the years, I think in 2003, we broke the state record 5-6 times. We're talking kokanee and Hauser at that time over 7 pounds, which is, I mean, world-class kokanee fishing. And we think what happened, it was kind of a few things, you know. Walleye really came online in Canyon Ferry. There was consistent flushing of walleye into Hauser Reservoir, which Hauser was stocked at one point with walleye. But we think what happened was, you know, the forage-based depletion led walleye to maybe cropping off all those final attempts in the early 2000s. And we were kind of scratching our head as to what to do at that time. The fisheries biologists were trying everything. They were planting larger kokanee, smaller kokanee at different times of the year. And frankly, they were not recruiting to adulthood. And we were stuck with decisions about, well, do we move on and this is now a rainbow walleye perch fishery, or do we try to reestablish kokanee at that? And at that time, we decided to move away from kokanee in Hauser. And basically the same thing happened in Holter, except for in 2009, we did have some surplus fish that we tried in Holter, but in reality, they never recruited to adulthood. So in large part, both Hauser and Holter were not planted with kokanee up until 2020.
Okay, now Holter, Adam, Holter, you never used to plant the kokanee in Holter. You always just planted them in Hauser, correct?
Yes, that's correct. And I do want to clarify one thing. I was kind of talking about both reservoirs. We still to date have not planted kokanee in recent times in Holter. But we did plant some surplus fish starting in 2020 in Hauser and again in 22 and now again in 23.
Okay, so why do you think the kokanee are showing up in Holter when you haven't planted anything in there? I guess it goes back to they're coming up to try to spawn underneath the, or right below the Hauser Dam?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of things going on here. So since 2011-12, we've had perch in incredible numbers in Holter Reservoir. And so I think that forage base in Holter for, you know, the more predaceous species have got walleye in particular back to eating what they normally would. You know, prior to 2011, they were pretty opportunistic, meaning they were kind of, you know, targeting whatever was available in the system. And I think since we've had a reestablishment of perch in Holter, you know, the kokanee that historically have spawned on their own in the system have gotten a foothold back in that population. And I think that in large part has led to the successful spawning and equating to recruiting of a large adult back in the population.
But the kokanee are only a 4-year fish, correct? I mean, they expire in 4 years. Like you said, they go up below the dam there at Hauser. Well, that means that, you know, some of those are going to be gone. And that's where the eagles come in play.
Yeah, so typically we see if we get fish to 4.5 years old, that's a great kokanee life cycle. For example, another area of water body, the Helena Valley Regulating Reservoir, which still is fishing excellent for kokanee, you know, those fish tend to age out at 2.5 years old. If we get 3.5-year-olds there, that's a big deal. But you're right. I mean, these big populations that are now spawning in Holter are likely relic fish that always, you know, historically got a spawn off in some capacity. They were probably cropped off for like the last 15 years. And now that they've been able to reestablish, I think what we're seeing is, you know, spawning efforts, successful spawning efforts occurring on an annual basis.
Okay. Adam, so why do you suppose that is? what changed in Holter that caused this population to start coming back? And I mean, we're seeing beautiful kokanee coming out of there.
Yeah, again, I think it was a combination of perch coming back online. You know, one age class is all it takes. And that's what we hang our hat on for all of these species that we've been talking about, you know, whether it be canyon fairy, Hauser, or Holter, you know, it just takes one good age class to get off a successful spawn. And then that hopefully leads to future successful spawning attempts. And you know, in our netting surveys, we're not seeing, you know, numbers like what we were seeing back in the 2000s, 2010. We're not seeing numbers like that. But what we are seeing is anglers successfully targeting and finding kokanee in traditional locations. And that has not been the case for like 15 years.
I know I can speak for a whole lot of fishermen out there that we are so happy to hear the kokanee are doing well in Holter Reservoir. Well, there you have it, everyone. There are your five most listened to podcasts for 2023. Congratulations to Adam Strainer for becoming the most listened to guest of the year on the Montana Outdoor Podcast. On behalf of all of us here who work to make this podcast happen each week, thank you so very much for listening to our shows. It not only means a great deal to us, it keeps us in a job we all love very much. Also, a huge thank you to our sponsors, Superior Hardwoods of Montana, home of the largest selection of in-stock, high-end wood products and flooring in the western United States. Let them guide you through the woods at superior-hardwoods.com. And by Rocky Mountain Truck and Trailer in Missoula, home of Boss Snowplows, CM Truck Beds, and Diamond C Trailers. Just go to rmtte.com for more information. So what did you think of today's podcast? Send your questions and comments to downrigger at montanaoutdoor.com. We should be dropping a new podcast this next Saturday. Until then, we will see you soon out in Montana's great outdoors.